Osho, Tao, the Pathless Path, Volume 1, talks on extracts from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 5.
Bhagwan, when Lin Li was nearly 100, he put on his fur coat in the middle of spring and went to pick up the grains dropped by the reapers, singing as he made his way through the fields. Confucius, who was on a journey to Wei, saw him in the distance. Turning to his disciples, he said, "That old man should be worth talking to. Someone should go and find out what he has to say." Zhu Kung asked to be the one to go. He met Lin Li at the end of the embankment and, looking him in the face, sighed, "Don't you ever feel any regret? Yet you pick up the grains singing as you go." Lin Li neither halted in his steps nor paused in his song. Zhu Kung went on pressing him until he looked up and answered, "What have I to regret? A child, you never learned how to behave. A man, you never strove to make your mark. No wife nor son in your old age, and the time of your death is near. Master, what happiness have you had that you should sing as you walk picking up the grains? The reasons for my happiness all men share," said Lin Li, smiling, "but instead they worry over them. It is because I took no pains learning to behave when I was young and never strove to make my mark when I grew up that I have been able to live so long. It is because I have no wife and sons in my old age and the time of my death is near that I can be so happy. It is human to want one long life and hate death. Why should you be happy to die? Death is a return to where we set out from when we were born. So how do I know that when I die here, I should not be born somewhere else? How do I know that life and death are not as good as each other? How do I know that it is not a delusion to crave anxiously for life? How do I know that present death would not be better than my past life?" Zhu Kung listened but did not understand his meaning. He returned and told Confucius. "I knew he would be worth talking to," said Confucius, "and so he is. But he is a man who has found it, yet not found all of it."
Tao is not rational. It is not anti-rational either. It is super-rational. Life is more than reason. Life is more than can be understood by the mind. Life has to give you more than you can learn. It is bigger than your capacity of learning. It is bigger than you can ever know, but it can be felt. Tao is intuitive. Tao is more total. When you approach life through the head and only through the head, it is a part approach. Misunderstanding is bound to be there. A man who is trying to figure it out is bound to fall into a tremendous trap and will not be able to come out of it easily. Once you start intellectualizing about life, you start going astray. Life has to be lived. Life has to be lived existentially and not intellectually. Intellect is not a bridge, but a barrier. This has to be understood, then the parable is of tremendous import. And we are going to go into it very slowly, trying to understand each sentence in it, each word, actually. Confucian approach is a mind approach. Taoist approach is a no-mind approach. Confucius thinks about life, Lao-tzu, Chuang-tzu, Li-tzu, they don't think about life because they say you can go on thinking and thinking about and you will go round and round and you will never reach to the center. About and about is not the way. Go direct. Be immediate. See life, don't think about it. Always remember, the menu is not the dinner. You can go on studying the menu. That is not going to help. You will have to eat. You will have to swallow. You will have to digest. You will have to be existentially connected with your food. You will have to absorb it into your being. You will have to make it a part of your being. Just studying the menu or the cookbook is not going to help. The scholar goes on studying the menu. The more hungry he becomes, the more he studies the menu. And naturally, the scholar remains one of the most hungry person in life. He has never lived, he has never loved, he has never taken any risk. He has never moved, never danced, never celebrated. He has been just sitting there and thinking about it. The scholar has decided first he has to understand intellectually, then he will move. Now this is no way to move. First you have to move and then comes understanding. Many people come to me and they said they would like to become sannyasins. They are attracted with the idea. They are intrigued, but they have to think about it. First, naturally, they said they have to think about it. Then they will decide. How you can think about sannyas? What you will think about it? It is an inner experience. It is something of the inner space. It is a contact with me of the inner. Nobody can watch it. You can watch sannyasins, but you cannot know anything about sannyas by watching sannyasins. Even if the sannyasin himself tries to figure it out intellectually, he will not be able. Sannyas has to be tasted. Even then it is very difficult to intellectually explain it. But to think about it without moving into it is impossible. It is as if somebody says, first I will have to know about love and then I will love. How you are going to know about love? The only way to know about love is to fall in love. There is no other way. You can go to the library. You can ask many people. You can consult books and encyclopedias. And you will find 1,001 things about love, but not love. You may become too much of a scholar. Your mind may be stuffed with information, but information is not knowing. Knowledge is not knowing. It can deceive you, but it cannot deceive life. As far as life is concerned, you will remain a desert. the flower of love will never bloom in your being. So is sannyas. So is everything that is significant. So is everything that is organic. So is everything that is alive. This is the basic standpoint of Tao. Now this parable. When Lin Lei was nearly 100, he put on his fur coat in the middle of a spring and went to pick up the grains dropped by the reapers, singing as he made his way through the fields. Lin Lei is a Taoist master. But as Taoist masters are, they live a very ordinary life. They don't live in any extraordinary way. They don't claim that they are special beings, talented, geniuses, sages, saints, mahatmas. They don't claim anything. They simply live a very ordinary life because they are natural beings. Natural like the trees, natural like the birds, natural like nature itself. They are not in any way egoistic. For example, if in India you want to find out where are the Mahatmas, you can easily find. But if you had gone to visit ancient China and you wanted to know a Taoist master, nobody would have been able to say to you where you will find. You will have to look, move, wander around the country. Sometime you may come across. But there is no way. Unless you have experienced something of it in your own being, unless you have the taste, the flavor, you will not be able to recognize a Taoist master. Lin Lei is a Taoist master, a simple man, very old, very ancient, 100 years old, and he is picking up the grains dropped by the reapers. Now this is the lowliest job one can find, the most beggarly, and yet singing as he made his way through the fields. The Taoist is always happy because he does not wait for any cause. He does not wait for any special situation in which he is going to be happy. Happiness is like breathing. Happiness is like the beat of the heart. Happiness is his being. It is not something that happens to him. Happiness is not something that happens and does not happen. Happiness is something that is always there. He is full of happiness. Happiness is the stuff that existence is made of. And a Taoist has fallen in harmony with existence. Naturally, he is happy. Whatsoever he is doing it happily. His happiness precedes his action. Sometimes you are happy and sometimes you are unhappy, because your happiness is conditional. When you are succeeding, you are happy. When you are failing, you are unhappy. Your happiness depends on some outer cause. You cannot sing always. Even if you sing, your song will not have the singing always. Sometimes it will be really a delight, and sometimes just a repetition, dead and dull. Sometimes When the friend has come, when you have found a beloved, you are happy. Sometimes when the friend has gone, the beloved is lost, you are unhappy. Your happiness and unhappiness is caused from the outside. It is not an inner flow. It is not something that you possess. It is given to you by others and taken away. Given to you by circumstances and taken away. This is not worth, because you remain a slave. You are not a master. The Taoists call a person a master whose happiness is absolutely his own. He can be happy irrespective of the situations. Young he is happy, old he is happy. As an emperor he is happy, as a beggar he is happy. His song is uncontaminated by circumstances. His song is his own. His song is his natural rhythm. This man, 100 years old, ordinarily a man of 100 years of age, will not be able to sing. What is there to sing now? Life has disappeared. Life has oozed out. He's almost dry as a bone. And there is nothing to hope. Only death is to come. Singing, celebrating for what? A man of 100 years has no future. His life is spent. He is exhausted. Any moment death will knock him down. For whom? For what? For what reason? A man can sing like that. And at the age of 100 years, one has to go to do such a beggarly job. One has to pick up the grains dropped by the reapers. That means nobody is there to look after the old man. He is left alone. No family, it seems. No son, no daughters, no wife, no brothers, nobody to look after him. What is there to sing about? But if you have the song, the real song, the song that arises from your intrinsic core, your innermost center, then it does not matter. One can go on singing even when death is descending. One can go on singing even if somebody is killing you. Your body can be killed, but not your song. Your body can be imprisoned, but not your song. Your song is eternal because it is uncaused. Remember this, a very fundamental law of life: that which is caused is never eternal. That which is caused is temporal. When the cause will disappear, it will disappear. It is a byproduct. That which is uncaused is going to be forever and forever, because there is nothing that can destroy it. Your body will die. It has been caused. The meeting of your father and mother has been the cause of it. Your body will die. One day it has been caused. It has a certain energy, a certain life span. Then it will be finished. Every day you are dying. One day you will simply disappear into the grave. But is that all that you have? Is that all that is your being? Is there not something more? There is something more which has never been caused. There is something in you which was before you were ever born. That is going to be there even after you are gone forever. After you have died, that which was before your birth will remain. That is uncaused. That's why Taoists don't believe that God created the world, that God created man, that God created souls. If God has created souls, then they have been caused, and one day they will disappear. Howsoever far that day is not material. If the world has been caused and man has been created, then one day the world will be uncreated and man will be uncreated. Taoists say that which is eternal, uncaused, uncreated. They don't have a creator. In fact, nobody has ever reached that peak, that sublime peak of understanding as the Taoists. All other religions look juvenile. The Taoist maturity is so tremendous, is of such splendor, is of such depth and height that no other religion can be compared to it. They all look kindergarten schools. Made especially for children. Made especially for children, that's why the God is the Father. Children cannot be independent, they need a father. If your real father has disappeared, then you need an imaginary father in the heaven to still control you. You are not mature enough. You cannot be on your own. You have to lean on somebody or other. Taoists have no concept of God. Not that they are godless. They are the most godly. But they don't have a concept of God. Existence is enough. There is no creator, there is no creation. There is eternity. This has always been so. This will always be so. Once you have come in contact with this eternal continuity inside your being, the substratum, then there is nothing to be miserable. You are eternal. You are immortal. There is no death to you because there never has been any birth. You are uncreated. You cannot be destroyed. Whatsoever the outer circumstances, your inner light goes on burning bright, and the song continues. Confucius, who was on a journey to Wei, saw him in the distance. Turning to his disciples, he said, "That old man should be worth talking to. Someone should go and find out what he has to say." Confucius was always in search of knowledge. He was always in search of somebody who can say something to him. He was always ready to borrow knowledge. That's how the intellectual functions. All that he has is borrowed. He never looks within. He goes on looking outside. If somebody has it, then I should go and inquire. The intellectual is imitative, mechanical, parrot-like. For the intellectual, knowledge is something that has to be learned. He never looks within his own being. He never looks into his own inner consciousness. He never tries to understand the knower. He is after knowledge. And there is the difference. The Taoist is not after knowledge, but he wants to know Who is this knower? What is this knowing? He wants to know the source of this knowing, from where this consciousness is arising. You are here. You are listening to me. Now, you can be either a Confucian or a Taoist, because these are the only two standpoints possible. If you are listening to me, and you become more and more interested in what I am saying, and start collecting it, then you are a Confucian. But while you are here, listening to me, feeling my presence, looking into my eyes, you become aware of the consciousness that is within you, the attention that is within you, and you become intrigued what it is, and a deep inquiry arises, who am I? Not that you have to repeat the words, who am I? But a deep inquiry, a quest arises, a passion to know, who is this consciousness in me? What is this consciousness in me? What is its nature? What's its quality? From where it comes? Where it is going? If this passion to know your consciousness arises, you are a Taoist. And only a Taoist is a religious person. The Confucian is a scholar. He is a pundit. He is a professor. If you talk to him, he will talk about great things. But if you look into his being, there is nothing. All that he has gathered is borrowed. Again and again, the Taoists write stories in which Confucius is going from somewhere to somewhere, always traveling, accumulating, and always looking from where he can get knowledge, as if knowledge is a commodity, as if knowledge is a thing that you can get somewhere from somebody. Nobody can give you knowledge. It is not a thing to be transferred. You have to become it. You have to grow into knowing. It is an inner transformation. No university can give you what religions call real knowing. Whatsoever you can get from the universities is information. Stale, borrowed, dirty, because it has passed thousands of hands. It is like a currency note. That's why the note is called currency, because it goes on moving like a current from one hand to another, from one pocket to another pocket. But then it goes on becoming dirty and dirtier. So is knowledge. Down the centuries, it goes on from one generation to another generation, from one generation of professors to another generation of professors. Knowing is fresh. Knowing is from the source. And that source is alive in you, waiting for you to turn in. Don't look for it in the outside. Look within. That's what Jesus goes on saying, the kingdom of God is within you. Confucius, who was on a journey to Wei, he is always on a journey, seeking, searching for knowledge. He goes to everybody, wherever somebody says somebody has attained knowledge, he goes there. This is silly. This is stupid. But this is the stupidity all the scholars have. They are basically of the mind that knowledge can be purchased. They are basically of the mind that knowledge is a thing, not an experience, a theory, not an experience. So one can learn it from somebody else. Remember one thing, that is the difference between scientific knowledge and religious knowledge. Once somebody has discovered the law of gravitation, everybody has not to discover it again and again. That will be foolish. You cannot go to the world and declare that what Newton discovered, I have discovered again. Yes, the law of gravitation. I have again saw an apple falling and I have discovered the law of gravitation. People will laugh. They will say that there is nothing now to discover. Discover something else which has not been discovered before. Science is information. If one man has discovered, then it can be transferred to everybody. The knowledge that science seeks is of the outside. So it can be learned from the outside. But religion has to be discovered again and again. It is like love. Millions of people have loved before you. But unless you love, you will never know what it is. You cannot say millions of people have loved, so what is the point of me loving again? Why go in the same rut? So many people have loved and they have written their diaries and their love letters are available. We can look into the books and have the knowledge. But no, you will have to love. You will have to rediscover it. Unless you discover it, it will never be a knowing. Religion is like love. It is not like science. Einstein has discovered the theory of relativity. Now finished. Now nobody else is needed to discover it. What may have taken 50 years for a scientist to discover, a school child can learn it within 5 minutes. But that is not the way of religion. What Buddha discovered, what Lao Tzu discovered, Li Tzu discovered, you will have to discover again. Confucius is on the wrong track. Confucius is used in Taoist tales as a laughing stock. Confucius, who was on the journey to Wei, saw him in the distance. Turning to his disciples, he said, that old man should be worth talking to. Why? Because 100 years old, doing the lowliest job, and still singing? Go and inquire, what is the reason of his happiness? Why he is happy? Why he is singing? So we will be able to deduct a law. Some technique can be discovered. Someone should go and find out what he has to say. Tazu Kung asked to be the one to go, one of the chief disciples of Confucius. He met Lin Lei at the end of the embankment and looking him in the face cited, don't you even feel any regret? Yet you pick up the grains singing as you do, as you go. Don't you ever feel any regret? Because to the disciple of Confucius, this man seems to have nothing to be happy about. He should be crying, that will be logical. He should be weeping, that will be rational. But singing, picking up grains, 100-year-old, waiting for death, what more you need to be sorrowful? He should be utterly miserable. That will be logical. This is illogical. But Taoists are illogical people. And I would like you to become illogical. Because only illogical people are fortunate enough to be happy. The logicians are never happy. They cannot be. They have taken a wrong route from the very beginning. They think, as everything else is caused, happiness has to be caused too. That is their wrong standpoint. Happiness needs only understanding, no other cause. And understanding is also not a cause of it. Understanding simply unveils it. It is inside you. It simply removes the veil and suddenly it is there. Your beloved is inside you. It has to be unveiled, that's all. Unveiling is not a cause. Cause means it has to be created. Unveiling simply means it was already there, you were foolish enough not to unveil it. This Confucian approach towards life has to be understood, because many of you are bound to be in the Confucian company. The whole West is Confucian, logical, intellectual. The Confucian approach is based on the idea as if truth has to be learned. That it is only a question of learning. If you learn well, you will know what truth is. No. The Taoists say truth has to be lived, not learned. Truth has to be experienced. Just by becoming more knowledgeable, you will not know it. In fact, to have truth, you will have to go through unlearning. You will have to wash clean your mind. Whatsoever you have learned is functioning like a block. You will have to become again ignorant. You will have to become innocent. You will have to drop all this nonsense that you are carrying in the name of knowledge. You don't know anything, but you think as if you know. This as if is the problem. Somebody asks you, do you know God? And you say yes. Have you ever thought over it? What you are saying? Do you really know? But you pretend. Whom you are deceiving? I have heard a beautiful anecdote. The tough guy sauntered into the dimly lit saloon. Is there anybody here called Donovan? He snarled. Nobody answered. Again he snarled. Is there anybody here called Donovan? There was a moment of silence, and then a little fellow strode forward. I am Donovan, he said. The tough guy picked him up and threw him across the bar. Then he punched him in the jaw, kicked him, clubbed him, slapped him around a bit and walked out. About 15 minutes later, the little fellow came back. Boy, did I fool him? He said, I aren't the no one. To whom you are fooling? You will be fooling only yourself, nobody else. Remember very well what you know and what you don't know. P.D. Ouspensky, in his one of the greatest books, Tarsiyam Arghanam, says that for the seeker, the first thing to decide is what he knows and what he does not know. The first thing to decide. Once that decision has been taken, things become very clear. Do you know God? Do you know yourself? Do you know what love is? Do you know what life is? But man goes on pretending as if he knows. Because it is very hurting to know that you don't know. It is very ego-shattering to know that you don't know. The ego pretends. The ego is the greatest pretender there is. It pretends. It says, yes, I know. There are knowers who say God is not. There are knowers who say God is, but both are knowers. As far as knowledge is concerned, neither the theist nor the atheist are in any way different. If you go in India and you ask people, anybody, and he will say, yes, God is. You go to Russia and ask anybody, and he will say, he knows God is not. But one thing is certain, both know. And that is the problem. The theist and the atheist are not opposite. They are not enemies. They are partners in the same game. Because both are pretending that they know. A real man of understanding will not pretend that he knows. And then there is a possibility someday to know. Begin with ignorance. And someday you may be fortunate enough to know. Begin with knowledge, and this is certain, that you will never be able to know. The Confucian goes on trying to learn. The Taoist goes on trying to unlearn. Lin Lei neither halted his steps nor paused in his song. Tazu Kung went on pressing him until he looked up and answered, what have I to regret? First, he won't even stop his song to listen what this man is asking. Because Taoists are not interested in curious people. They say, curiosity leads nowhere. Curiosity is a disease. Curiosity is not enough. Curiosity is not inquiry. Inquiry means you are ready to put your life at stake. Inquiry means you are not only a student but a disciple. Inquiry means it is not just a whim to ask. You are ready to go into it, whatsoever the cost. You are ready to pay for it. It is not just entertainment. So Lin Lei neither halted his steps nor paused in his song. He didn't pay any attention to this curious man who is asking that why you are singing, what you have got to be happy about. Because if this man is really the man of inquiry, he will not jump upon so suddenly. He will wait. He will come to the master, sit by the side of the master. He will wait. In Taoist circles, this is an accepted norm. That when a disciple comes to the master, he has to wait unless the master asks him, for what you have come. And the master will ask only when he has tested that you are not only curious, you have inquiry. That you have not just come by the way. That your search is not lukewarm only, but intense, that you are burning, that you are ready to explode. Only then the master will ask why you have come. What's your inquiry? This is no way to approach a master. And to ask such a foolish question, the question is foolish. To ask why you are happy, the question is foolish. The why is meaningless. If somebody is miserable, you can ask why you are miserable. But if somebody is happy, you cannot ask why you are happy. Somebody is ill, ask why you are ill. The question is relevant. But if somebody is healthy, you cannot ask why you are healthy. The question is irrelevant. Health is as it should be. Happiness is as it should be. If somebody has gone mad, you can ask why he has gone mad. And if it's somebody sane, you don't ask why you are sane. What you have got to be sane about, that is meaningless. And when you approach a happy person, a really happy person, you should look directly rather than creating a smoke of questions. You should wait on the master. You should help the master. You should drink out of the energy that is flowing around the master. You should taste the celebration that is going on there. You should allow his presence to penetrate your being. You should function like a sponge. So you become full of the presence of the master. That will be the answer. Now this is foolish, but I have come across millions of such people. I used to travel around the country. And even on railway stations, I am going to catch a train and somebody runs after me and said, "Is really there God? God exists? I am going to catch a train and my train is leaving." And I said, "You come later on." He said, "But just a single answer, one sentence will do." As if my saying yes or no is going to make any difference. Foolish people, stupid people, they think they are religious, they are making a great inquiry. That's why Linley neither halted his steps nor paused in his song. Tazukung went on pressing him until he looked up and answered, "What have I to regret?" Now look the change. Tazukung asks, "What you have got to be happy?" And the master says, "What I have got to be unhappy?" The total change, a 180-degree turn. And what he says, these four sentences are tremendous. You cannot find more rebellious sentences like these anywhere. Listen, a child, you never learned how to behave. He says these are the things that you should look into. A child, you never learned how to behave. A man, you never strove to make your mark. No wife nor son in your old age, and the time of your death is near. Try to understand each sentence. Each is pregnant with great meaning. A child, you never learned how to behave. Ordinarily, if you never learned as a child how to behave, you will be miserable your whole life. You will repent. You never went to the school, you never learned the manners, the etiquette, the ways of society, the formalities. You will repent your whole life. But he says, there is nothing to regret. Because when I was a child, I never learned how to behave. I was never a slave. I was free from my very childhood. I never allowed anybody to discipline me. I was never an imitator. I have lived my life as I wanted it. I have never allowed anybody to distract me. So why I should regret? Why? There is no reason to regret. If I had allowed people, my family, the friends, the society, the priest, the politician, the state, if I had allowed them to discipline me, then there was much to be miserable about. But I have lived a free life from the very childhood. I have remained free. I have lived in freedom. So what is there to regret about? This is of tremendous significance. And when I am saying it to you, this is my own feeling too. I have also lived the way I wanted to live. I have never allowed anybody to distract me. Right or wrong, good or bad, foolish or wise, I have lived the way I wanted to live. I have no regrets. There cannot be any regrets. This is the way I wanted to live. This is the way I have lived. And life has allowed me to live the way I wanted to live. I am thankful. I am grateful. Now I know that if I had allowed the do-gooders, then I would have been miserable. Not that they were really wanting to harm me. They may have wanted really to help me. That is not the point. That is not the point at all. They may have been well-wishers. But one thing is certain, they were distracting me. They were trying to force me towards some directions which were not coming spontaneous to me. That I have never listened. I have said to my well-wishers, thank you, the trouble that you are taking with me. But I am to go on my own way. If I fail, there will be one consolation, that I went on my own way and failed. But following you, even if I succeed, I will always repent. Who knows, if I had gone on my own way, what would have been the result? What would have been the outcome? I have heard about a great doctor, a great surgeon. He has become internationally known. And when he had become old and he was retiring, all his disciples from all over the world gathered to celebrate. The day they celebrated, they found that he looks a little sad. He was there, but not really. So a disciple asks, what is the problem, sir? Why you look so sad? Why? You have lived a successful life. Nobody can compete with you. You are unique in your field. You are the topmost man. And nobody will be able for centuries to replace you. You have everything to be happy about. And look at your disciples, your students, all over the world. They are spread. Why you are sad? And he said, seeing all this success, I am feeling very sad because I never wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a dancer. Now whole life is spent, wasted, because deep down I still repent. Why I listen to others? Yes, I have become successful, but that successfulness does not satisfy me, because it is a line. It is as if you were not hungry and somebody has forced you to eat. Maybe very nourishing food, but you will feel nauseous. You wanted to drink water and somebody has forced you to drink milk, certainly better than water, but you wanted to drink water. You were feeling thirsty and the milk has not satisfied you. It has deceived. And I can understand the man. He was sad. His sadness is meaningful. He was sad because now this whole success is nothing but a failure. Deep down he has failed. He has failed himself. He did not trust his own intuition and he allowed others to manipulate him. Look, this old man, Lin Lei's statement, a child you never learned how to behave. So what is there to regret? I have lived my life. I have lived my life in my own way. A man you never strove to make your mark, and I have never tried to make my mark. I was not ambitious. So what is there to regret? An ambitious man will always regret. Alexander died sad, in great frustration, because ambition by its very nature is unfulfillable. It is said when Alexander was in India, he went to see an astrologer and he asked the astrologer about his future. The astrologer looked at his hand and said, one thing I have to say to you, you will be able to win this world, but remember, there is no other world. And then you will be stuck. Then what you will do? The astrologer must have been a great wise man. And it is said, listening to this, that there is no other world, Alexander became sad. Now even this idea, that once you have conquered this world, what you are going to do? There is no other world. An ambitious mind will simply feel stuck. What to do then? And whatsoever you attain, nothing is attained, because ambition goes on spreading on and on. Only a non-ambitious person can be happy. An ambitious person is bound to be always frustrated. Ambition comes out of frustration. Out of ambition comes more frustration, and it is a vicious circle. This old master is saying a great truth. He says, a man, you never strove to make your mark. I was not worried to succeed in the world, to prove that I am somebody. I was not interested to become part of history. I was not interested to leave my mark, because this is foolish. Even if you get some place in history, what use it is? I have heard an anecdote. Moses was leading his people out of Egypt. And then they came to the sea. And it was impossible to cross. The parable is a very modern parable. He looked at his press agent and he said, what do you say? I have an idea. What is your opinion? I can ask the ocean, our gods, to give us way, and the ocean will separate. And the press agent said, if you can do that, then I promise one thing. In the Old Testament, you will have 2 pages. But even if in the Old Testament you have 2 pages, R20, R200, what is the meaning of it? And as history grows bigger, those 2 pages will become smaller and smaller and smaller. And one day just a footnote. And then when history will become even longer, and it is becoming longer every day, the footnotes will also disappear. Somewhere in the appendix. And by and by you are gone. When your life is gone, how long your mark on life can remain? And what is the point of it all? Great is the insight of this old master. A man, you never strove to make your mark, so what is there to regret? If you are ambitious, you will regret, because ambition is never fulfilled. If you are non-ambitious, you are happy, because frustration will have no entry in you. No wife nor son in your old age. And he says, I have no wife and no son. So what is there to be miserable about? Try to understand his meaning. He says, I am absolutely alone. Nobody to disturb my aloneness. My solitude is unperturbed. I am alone, free, absolutely my own master. Nobody to drag me here and there. No family, no relations. What is there to be miserable about? Remember, when you are alone, you are not alone. You are lonely. You miss the company of the others. You miss the company of the other because you have not yet learned how to be in your own company. You miss the company of the other because you don't know how to be with yourself. Loneliness is negative, absence of the other. Aloneness is positive, presence of your own being. Loneliness is solitariness. Aloneness is solitude. Loneliness is ugly. Aloneness is beautiful. Aloneness has a luminosity in it. Buddha is alone. I am alone. Lihitasu is alone. This old man, Lin Lei, is alone. When you are sitting alone, you are lonely. You are simply missing. Deep down, you are seeking some company, where to go, what to do, how to get occupied so you can forget yourself. You have not yet learned the way to be with yourself. You have not yet created a relationship with yourself. You have not yet fallen in love with yourself. When this man says, no wife nor son in your old age, what is there to regret? I am alone. Like a great peak of the Himalayas, alone. Everything is beautiful and silent and blissful. And the time of your death is near. Death to the Taoist is just returning home. The journey is over. just as you go into a foreign land. For example, when my sannyasins go back, they go into a foreign land. So whenever they can come back, this is their home. They are happy. Death is coming back home, going to the origin, back to the source, returning from where we came. So the old man said, and the time of your death is near, so what is there to regret? I am simply happy, just happy. Everything is simply fine. More one cannot expect. A child you never learned how to behave. A man you never strove to make your mark. No wife nor son in your old age. And the time of your death is near. Master, what happiness have you had that you should sing as you walk picking up the grains? But the Confucian disciple could not understand. He repeats his question again. He missed. He heard, but he has not listened. It went above his head. Such a great saying, so full of experience, so utterly revolutionary, but the Confucian missed. The scholar always misses the truth. The pundit is the most incapable man of listening. His mind is so much full of his own ideas. While this tremendous saying is being uttered, Tazukung must be thinking 1001 thoughts in his mind, must be preparing for more questions, what to ask next. He appears listening, but he has not listened. Master, what happiness have you had that you should sing as you walk picking up the grains? Again, the question is meaningful. What happiness have you had? Remember, if there is a cause to happiness, then the cause is bound to be in the past. Causes are always in the past. If you are happy, the question is what has made you happy? And that which has made you happy has gone into the past. So a caused happiness is past-oriented. Past-oriented means that which is no more. It is fictitious. It is imaginary. It is illusory. The real happiness is present-oriented. It is never past-oriented. The real happiness arises here now. This very moment, there is no time for it to be caused. It is cause and effect together. Try to understand it. If you say, I am happy because I was born to a rich father. Now this is 70 years, 100 years back. Your happiness about something which has passed 100 years back is just a figment in your memory. You say, I am happy because 10 years before I was given the Nobel Prize. 10 years before you were given the Nobel Prize, your happiness is very dusty. 10 years, so much dust has accumulated. It is not fresh. Stale it is. You are a very poor man. You are eating food that was prepared 10 years before. The real happiness is here now. It has no concern with the past. It has no concern with the future. Sometimes you become happy about the future. You are hoping that you are going to get a lottery. or you are hoping that this is going to happen tomorrow. Your girlfriend is coming tomorrow and you are getting excited. For what? For tomorrow, which has not come yet? You are mad. Either your happiness is past-oriented or future-oriented, and both are false, because neither the past is nor the future is. The past has already gone out of existence. The future has not entered yet. The real, authentic happiness is here now. This moment it arises, out of nowhere. Because there are not two moments together. That's why it is uncaused. Because for cause and effect to exist, at least two moments will be needed. One to cause it, another to effect it. But only this moment, total, alone, single, is available. Again, the inquirer asks the wrong question. What happiness have you had that you should sing as you walk picking up the grains? The reasons for my happiness all men share. The old man says again something beautiful. The reasons for my happiness all men share. It has nothing to do with me. Everybody has got it. But they don't recognize. Not only that, they don't recognize it. They seek for it, which is already available. Not only that, they seek it. They even, instead, they worry over them. The same reasons, for example, these four reasons. The reasons for my happiness all men share, said Lin Li, smiling, but instead they worry over them. You worry about your childhood because you were not well educated, were not sent to Harvard or Oxford or Cambridge, that your parents were poor, that you were not brought up as well as you would have liked, that you were not trained, that you missed many opportunities. You are sorry for it. You worry about it. This should be a cause to be happy. Everything should be a cause to be happy. Only then a person can be happy. Otherwise, the poor person goes on crying and weeping because he was poor, and the rich person also goes on crying and weeping because he was rich. I have known rich people. They say their parents destroyed them because they were allowed so much comfort in their childhood that they never learned anything. You have seen, you must have observed, it is very rare to find a rich man's son intelligent, very rare. They are all stupid. They're bound to be. Because what is the point to become intelligent? Why bother? They have already all that they need. All that they can get through intelligence is already there. So why intelligence? In the universities they fail. Everywhere they fail. They don't care a bit. When I was in the university, I had a student who failed for 5 years in his BA class. I asked him, 5 years I have waited. Sixth year, when the examinations were coming again, I said, what are your plans? Are you going to fail again? He said, who bothers? My father is rich. Only poor bothers. If you are born in a rich family, then too you are not happy. If you are born in a poor family, of course, how you can be happy? If you are healthy, you are not happy. Because if you are healthy, you never think health as something to be happy about. A healthy person never thinks about health. If you are unhealthy, you are unhappy. Look at your logic of the mind. Whatsoever you can find to be miserable about, you simply jump upon it. And whatsoever you can be happy about, you simply forget. You don't take any note of it. But instead they worry over them. It is because I took no pains learning to behave when I was young, the old man has to repeat. He has said it, but seeing that the person has not listened, has not understood it, he has to repeat. It is because I took no pains learning to behave when I was young and never strove to make my mark when I grew up that I have been able to live so long. It is because I have no wife and sons in my old age and the time of my death is near that I can be so happy. This you will find in all the Orient scriptures again and again. Great repetition. The reason is that the truths are such that the masters have to repeat them. Because once said, they are not understood. Twice said, they are not understood. Buddha used to repeat everything three times. Even small things. He will ask a disciple, have you heard me? Have you heard me? Have you heard me? Three times. Out of great compassion. When Buddhist scriptures were translated into Western languages, they were very much puzzled. Why? Was Buddha talking to very stupid people? Why he repeats so much? No, they were as intelligent people as you are, as anywhere ever have been. It is not a question of intelligence, it is a question of awareness. They are not aware. They are as unaware as you are. I have to repeat continuously. My editors get puzzled. You can ask Anurag, you can ask Pratima. They get puzzled. Why I repeat? They would like to sort it out. I don't allow them. I say, leave it as it is. Because these truths are such, once you may miss, I hope twice you may pay a little attention, thrice, I have to go on repeating. That is like hammering on your head. How long you can go on missing? It is a war between me and you. The old man repeated again, but again he has not been understood. Tazukung said, it is human to want long life and hate death. Why should you be happy to die? The basic things have been missed. Only one thing he has taken out of the four, the last. But the last can be understood only if the three preceding it have been understood, otherwise not. If the first three have been understood, a child you never learned how to behave, a man you never stopped to make your mark, no wife nor son in your old age, and the time of your death is near. Just see, first belongs to the childhood, second to your youth, third to your old age, then comes death. It is a very natural corollary. It is absolutely logical. You have to begin from the very beginning. But he has forgotten about the three. He has not listen to the three. He jumped on the fourth. He must be an afraid man, a man who is afraid about death. That catches his attention. But unless the three are understood, the fourth will be missed. It is human to want long life and hate death. Why should you be happy to die? It is not human. Maybe it is manly, but not human. You have to understand these two words. In the dictionaries, they are synonyms, but they are not in reality. Just as I told you, loneliness and aloneness are synonyms in the dictionary, but not in reality. So, man and human are two different things. Man is a static concept, like dog, like buffalo, like donkey. Man is a static concept, just a name of a certain species. One species is of the monkeys, another of buffaloes, one is of man. Have you watched? For man, we have two terms, man and human. For dogs, you have only one term, dogs. For buffaloes, only one, buffaloes. For donkeys, donkeys. Why? Why this human? It has a significance. Man means simply a biological species. Human has nothing to do with biology. Human is a growing concept, open concept. Man is a closed concept. Man means you are a being. Human means you are a process. You are going. You are a journey. You are a pilgrimage. You are ongoing. You are a going beyond. Friedrich Nietzsche has said, the greatest thing that I love in man is that he is not the goal but the bridge. The most that I love in man is that he is an ongoing process, not an end, but a means, a journey. Human means the bridge between man and God. Man means just man. There is no opening in it. The word human is open. It goes beyond man. Human is a bridge. Human is a journey, a pilgrimage. One is going somewhere. One is seeking something. One is trying to become something. Man is static. Human is dynamic. Man is like a thing. Human is a process, river-like, flowing, reaching to the beyond, groping in the dark. Man is sitting, not going anywhere, crippled, dead, like a grave. Human is a river, not knowing where the ocean is, but trying hard to reach. Remember this. Man is afraid of death. Human. No, it is not human to be afraid of death. A person who is on a pilgrimage, he is ready to die if that is needed to go on. He is ready to go beyond. He is ready to use the door of death to pass beyond. The man said, it is human to want long life. No, it is not human to want long life. Yeah, it is relevant as far as the concept of man is concerned. Dogs are afraid of death. Buffaloes are afraid of death. Donkeys are afraid of death. So is man. But to be human, one is so thrilled with the possibility. One wants to know what death is. As one has lived one's life, one starts feeling, now I have known what life is, I would like to know what death is. Life has been known, it was beautiful. Now let us see what death is. Let it be another adventure. Socrates is human when he is dying, when he is being given the poison. His disciples are crying and weeping. And he said, stop. You can do it when I am gone, but not now. This is wastage, sheer wastage. Such a great thing is happening. I am dying and you are crying. And they said, Master, you are dying. Are not you afraid? He said, for what? I have lived my life. I loved it. It was beautiful. I have known it. But there is no need to go on repeating it forever and ever. Now something new. Death is so new. I am enchanted. I am thrilled. The adventure is so great, says Socrates. I would like to see what death is now. One of the disciples, Crito, said, but Master, everybody is afraid of death. Socrates says, I don't know. I don't understand why people are afraid of death. Either the atheists are right that one dies utterly and nothing is left. Then there is nothing to be feared. Socrates will not be there. So why be afraid? I was not there before I was born. And I don't feel any fear about it. Have you ever felt any fear that you were not before you were born? Any fear grips you? Nothing. You will say nonsense, because when I was not, then what is the point of being afraid? And Socrates says, I will again be disappearing if atheists are right. Then what is the fear? There will be nobody to be afraid. Or maybe the theists are true, and I will be there. If I am going to be there, then why be afraid? Now this is a man who has lived a dynamic life, a life of growth, evolution. If you have lived a life of evolution, then death comes as a revolution, a sudden change to some unknown reality. Why one should be afraid? No, human, it is not human. But all men are not human beings, remember. Very rarely, somewhere a Socrates, a Lihtasu, a Buddha, these are human beings. Ordinarily, there are men and women, but not human beings. To become a human being means to become a process, to become an inquiry, to become a passion for the impossible, a seeker of truth. Said the old man, death is a return to where we set out from when we were born. So how do I know that when I die here, I shall not be born somewhere else? The same Socratic attitude. So how do I know that when I die here, I shall not be born somewhere else? How do I know that life and death are not as good as each other? How do I know that it is not a delusion to crave endlessly for life? How do I know that present death would not be better than my past life? How do I know? See the insistence. He is not saying, I know. He is not claiming any knowledge. No wise man has ever claimed any knowledge. That's why Socrates says, maybe atheists are true, maybe theists are true. But that doesn't matter. Let any of them be true. I remain unperturbed. The wisdom, the real wisdom, is always agnostic. Remember this word, agnostic. A real seeker is agnostic. He never claims, I know. And he never says, this is the truth. He is very open. He is not closed. He has no dogma. He has no creed. He is simply conscious and aware and is ready to face any reality whatsoever. Whatsoever reality comes to be revealed, he is ready to go into it. He trusts life. People who don't trust life, they create beliefs, dogmas, theories to protect themselves. The real wise man is vulnerable. He does not protect. He is open to rains, to winds, to the sun, to the moon, to life, to death, to darkness, to light. He is open to all. He has no protection. His vulnerability is total. Remember this man's agnosticism. 100-year-old, a man starts feeling afraid of death. One starts thinking the soul must be immortal. One starts imagining, now I will be received in paradise with great fanfare. God must be waiting, and a great marble palace must be ready for me. One starts imagining things. One starts dreaming. But this man says, how do I know? He does not claim any knowledge. He simply says, I don't know. So what is the point of becoming afraid? I don't know this way or that way. I'm absolutely ignorant. I have not tasted death yet. So how do I know? Let me know. Why should I be afraid from the very beginning? It may turn out to be better than life. Who knows? Let it happen. Remember, the real understanding is always waiting for the moment to happen. It never decides beforehand. It never plans beforehand. It is spontaneous. Tazukung listened but did not understand his meaning. He returned and told Confucius. He could not understand because he was a great scholar, the chief disciple of Confucius. He was already stuffed with knowledge. He could not understand. He reported to Confucius, his master, and what Confucius says, listen, I knew he would be worth talking to. The man of knowledge always goes on claiming. Now he says, look, I knew he would be worth talking to, said Confucius, and so he is. He's trying to say to his disciples that I am proved right, that my inference was valid, that this man is worth talking to. But he cannot accept what the man has said. That is beyond him also. It is beyond his disciple and it is beyond him also. He says, but he is a man who has found it, yet not found it, all of it. He is a man who has found it, yet not found all of it. Now this is absurd. Truth cannot be divided. Either you found it, whole of it, or you don't have it at all. It is impossible to have a little bit of truth. It cannot be fragmented. It cannot be cut into slices. Truth is total. Truth is whole. Either you have it or you don't have it. It is not possible to have a little of truth. It is not possible to have a little of God. It is impossible. The very thing is absurd. But when you come to an expert, he has to say something to prove that he knows. Confucius says that this man has found it. He says it because he had sent the disciple Now he has to prove it, that he was right, but he cannot concede that he knows. So he says he knows a little bit, but not all of it. This happens. A man of knowledge always goes on protecting his ego. This statement is as absurd as a statement can be. You ask a Buddha, you ask Lao Tzu, you ask Jesus, you ask Krishna, and they will all say truth cannot be divided. It is not a thing that you can divide it. It is an experience. When it happens, it happens. When it happens totally. You disappear into that experience. But Confucius says, he has found, but not all of it. This very statement shows the ignorance, but the expert has always to protect his expertise. I have heard a beautiful anecdote. Listen to it carefully. The boy was running around with too many women. So the old man decided to send him to the leading psychiatrist. It was a long drawn out analysis and the bill was very high, but he felt it was worth it if a cure was reached. Finally, when the son returned, he demanded to know what had been covered in the treatment. Did you tell the doctors how he caught you with the maid when you were 10? The son nodded. Did you tell them we could not keep a cook for the last 10 years because of you? 23 cooks we ran through. The son nodded. Did you tell them about the 5 models from the place, the 33 girls in college, and what happened with the superintendent's wife? Again the son nodded. So tell me, what did they say? They said, I have homosexual tendencies, said the son. They said, I have homosexual tendencies. Experts have to say something. They have to show their expertise. Now, if this man has homosexual tendencies, then nobody can have heterosexual tendencies. Impossible. But the experts have to find something. They have to say something. Howsoever utterly absurd. Confucius says, this man has found it, yet not found all of it. That's all the comment that he made. And this old man has said such a profound philosophy. In those 4 sentences, a child you never learned how to behave, a man you never strove to make your mark, no wife nor son in your old age, and the time of your death is near. What is there to regret? And the reasons for my happiness, all men share. Because happiness is not something that you have to achieve, it is already there, it is inbuilt. It is your very nature. All men can be happy only if they stop finding causes to be happy. One has to be just happy for no reason at all. And he has given the whole message of Tao in these 4 sentences. Be anarchic. Be authentically true to your own being. Listen only to yourself. Don't allow anybody to discipline you. Don't allow anybody to make a slave of you. Don't allow anybody to condition you. The priest and the politician, avoid them. Avoid the do-gooders. Remember that you have to be just yourself and nobody else. This anarchy, this chaotic freedom. And don't be ambitious, because that is just mediocre. You just live your life as totally as possible. Don't try to make a mark on the history pages. That is meaningless. And don't be always concerned with others, by and by learn how to be alone. Enjoy solitude. That's what meditation is all about. And finally, remember that death is not a death. It is a new beginning. And who knows, maybe it leads you into a higher life. If cosmos has a rhythm in it, it must be so. It must be leading you into a higher life. You have learned so much. You have become more worthy. Naturally, the death must lead you to a higher plane of being. That seems to be simple. A man who has lived, loved, experienced, meditated, who has gone through so many things in life, has become more worthy. He has to be given a higher life. If this existence has any compassion, then death is going to be a higher plenitude, a higher peak, wait with thrill, with great adventure, wait with tremendous joy, delight, and celebration. Happiness is very natural. One should not seek it. One should simply enjoy it. Such a great message. And what Confucius says, that this man has found it, yet not found all of it. As if Confucius has found all of it. These parables are very subtle. They are a great shattering of the Confucian ideal. But their way is very polite. If you don't go deep, you may never understand. Meditate over these parables. They have great messages. Decode them. Your life will be tremendously enriched through them. Enough for today.